She's like, I'm here. I haven't left. You know, it's interesting. As I was listening to kids kind of singing, there was one kid in particular. I think that's her. She was just still singing like long after the song was over. She was like, no, let's do it again. You know, let's run it back. And, you know, sometimes that joy, we can kind of lose it, you know, because we can be so prim and proper and so buttoned up that we can forget that that's the way we should be singing, you know, that that's how excited we should be. And, you know, it was interesting. We've been looking, we're going to spend the rest of the month of September here looking in the book of Daniel. And I saw this yesterday, as a matter of fact. There was a lady, she was doing some kind of speech or something. I guess she wrote a book and she was talking about it, but she was speaking on it. And she was saying, she said, you know what? Very often as Christians, we spend so much time trying to prove ourselves, trying to prove ourselves worthy, trying to prove that we measure up, trying to earn the love and respect of God, that we forget to just worship Him. We forget to just enjoy the fact that we serve a God who loves us. And for all the knowledge we can fill our heads with, for all the books we can read, for all of the scriptural knowledge and all the things that we can store up, and those things are valuable, sometimes we can do so much of that that we can forget what just having raw faith is like. Because raw faith, just having faith in God and knowing who that God is, it'll make you happy. It'll actually put you in a place where you're kind of at peace, where nothing will bother you. You know, we talked about that last week when we were looking at Daniel in the lion's den. You know, that story that we all kind of learn as kids, and we all, you know, the Sunday school or vacation Bible school or something, we learn about Daniel in the lion's den. But what I want to look at today, I want to go back a little bit prior to Daniel in the lion's den, and I want to look at something that might, frankly, at least what I believe, inspired Daniel to have that courage, that bravery we talked about when he sleeps in the lion's den and he was not concerned about it. I want to look at a story that might have actually sparked that faith that was in him and hopefully sparked some faith in us, because sometimes we walk around and we're not happy like that baby. You know, we're not carefree, we're not faithful to a point where we're not concerned about what's going to happen the next day. And it doesn't mean that we don't need to be responsible. It doesn't mean that we don't need to take care of the matters that we have in front of us. But do we actually have faith in a God, the God who's created the whole universe, the God that knows all the numbers of hairs that are growing out of your head? He even knows how many have, like, you've lost over the years, right? Like, that amazing God who knows every little detail, sometimes we can forget that when it comes to our faith, we really don't have anything to prove. Sometimes it's our perspective that needs to change for our faith to increase. And so I want to look at this. The title of the sermon today is Nothing to Prove. And I want to talk about not only Daniel, but I want to talk about a few of his friends. A few of his friends who helped inspire his faith. Now, many of us know the story. We've maybe read or we were taught the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, right? We were taught about the three Hebrew boys. These were Daniel's friends. And just like Daniel, they were taken from their home. They were kind of plucked out and chosen to be in service to the king in Babylon. And there's kind of this, you know, meeting. There's kind of this point where everything comes to a head because there was a conflict that would come up. And, you know, you don't have to live very long to deal with conflict, right? You know, we all have some type of conflict, whether it's at home or work or whatever it is, we have this conflict, and yet that sometimes is when our faith gets challenged, it gets tested, it gets stressed, sometimes it cracks, it bends. But I want to look at this example of these three young men at this time because, frankly, if we would look at it the way God looks at it, actually it would increase our faith instead of challenging, instead of making it get called into question, our faith would actually be stronger because our perspective is different and we would know who our God is. You know, I think of, you know, when I was taught this back when I was a kid, you know, little images like this would come up. You see these, you know, these three images, and then they're all kind of holding hands, and you think, oh, who's the fourth guy? We're going to get into that in the story in just a second. But very often we kind of have this simple idea of this story where, you know, the king tells them to do something. They said, no, we're not going to do it. And he said, I'm going to throw you in this fiery furnace. And they said, well, okay, go ahead and do it. And then they look and they see this. But I kind of want to, like we did last week, go behind the music a little bit. I want to peel back the layers because their story is a story that we go through every day. But do we view it the way that they view it? Do we look at it from the same perspective that they look at it? I want to start in Daniel chapter 3. We're going to stay in Daniel chapter 3 today. Daniel chapter 3, I want to start in verse 12. At this point, Nebuchadnezzar has decided that, you know what, him and his men got together. They said, you know, we're going to build this gigantic golden statue. They measured it out. They estimated it was about 90 feet high, right? And so they said, we're going to build this giant statue, and everybody should bow down to this statue that you created. Everybody. Like, whoever it is, they should all bow down and show respect to this false god in which you've created. And we'll pick it up here in verse 12, where it says, there are certain Jews whom you have set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not paid due regard to you. They do not serve your gods or worship the gold image which you have set up. Then Nebuchadnezzar, in rage and fury, gave the command to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar spoke, saying to them, is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the gold image which I have set up? Now, if you are ready at this time, if you are ready, at the time you hear the sound of the horn, flute, harp, lyre, and psaltery, in symphony with all kinds of music, and you fall down and worship the image which I have made, good. But if you do not worship, you shall be cast immediately into the midst of a burning, fiery furnace. And who is the God who will deliver you from my hands? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If that is the case, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning, fiery furnace. And he will deliver us from your hand, O king. But if not, let it be known to you, O king, that we do not serve your gods, nor will we worship the gold image which you have set up. Very powerful statement there, right? You think, man, that's pretty serious. And it stands out that Nebuchadnezzar, he's furious because, you know, as a king and as someone who's over all of these people, the last thing he wanted was somebody to show him up, to disrespect him in some kind of way, to, you know, defy his orders. And the response that these young men had was pretty simple. They said, we have no need to answer you in this matter. And the reason why that stands out, And the reason why I draw attention to that is because I said we go through conflicts and issues every day, and sometimes we forget that the conflict is not even about us. You're being challenged on your job. You're being challenged in your particular environment. Whatever that is, you're facing some conflict, and we can sometimes forget that, as you might say, we're not the ones on trial. These young men are saying, Nebuchadnezzar, guess what? We don't have to answer you in this matter. Why? Because we know who our God is. Matter of fact, we not only do we know who our God is, we are fully confident that he's going to deliver us, that he's going to demonstrate who he is. And even if he doesn't, we're still not going to bow down to your God. That is the type of faith that comes from having a relationship with God, truly understanding who God is, but more importantly, understanding the scenario here. You know, it's like sometimes we walk into situations and we can be intimidated. We can grow fearful. We can feel like something is wrong. Maybe we need to do something different. Maybe I do need to consider what's going to be best for my career. Maybe I do need to consider what's going to be best for my education. Or maybe this is a situation where I need to consider how this is going to affect my family. Maybe I do need to compromise here or there or in this other place. And God's like, not only do you not need to compromise, but this isn't even about you. See, what's going to eventually happen, and we know the story, what's eventually going to happen is Nebuchadnezzar is going to find out that actually he's the one who's being tested. So often we're put in positions where we think the test is about us and we struggle in our faith because we feel like we're being challenged. We're being put on trial. We're being put in a position where we have to make a decision when in reality there's no decision to make at all. We're not even there for the decision because the decision is not about us. We're the vessel that God is using to demonstrate faith. Understanding the God you serve is more important than understanding your enemy. See, these boys, they weren't concerned about what was going to happen to them because they knew the God that they had. They knew that the God they served was not some gold statue, some block, some wood, some stone, some idol, something that could not do anything or talk back. You know, I talked about this last week, bravery, and I made mention of how when we see Daniel in the lion's den and how he comes out of that situation with Darius, see, Daniel had the benefit of being able to look back and see exactly how his friends many years ago handled this situation. See, it was so much easier for Daniel to have confidence when he's spending the night with a bunch of hungry lions. It's so much easier for him to have faith in that moment because he watched what his friends did many years prior. When we stand up and trust God and have faith in him, sometimes we forget that it's not just the situation we're in, but there are others watching you and watching your faith and watching your God. God is using you in that moment, not to be shaken or tested or to be fearful, but he's using you to demonstrate to others what real faith and real trust in him actually looks like. Let's continue. In verse 19, it says, "Then Nebuchadnezzar was full of fury, and the expression on his face changed toward Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He spoke and commanded that they heat the furnace seven times more than it was usually heated. And he commanded certain mighty men of valor who were in his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and cast them into the burning fiery furnace. Then these men were bound in their coats, their trousers, their turbans, and their other garments, and were cast into the midst of the burning, fiery furnace. Therefore, because the king's command was urgent and the furnace exceedingly hot, the flame of the fire killed those men who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell down, bound into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Then King Nebuchadnezzar was astonished, and he rose in haste and spoke, saying to his counselors, "Did we not cast three men bound into the midst of the fire?" They answered and said to the king, "True, O king." "Look," he answered, "I see four men loose, walking in the midst of the fire, and they are not hurt, and the form of the fourth is like the Son of God." We see this story. We see how it's shaping up, and suddenly it becomes clear that this was never about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. It was about God being seen. It was about God's glory being realized by Nebuchadnezzar. It is the Lord that men ultimately see through our example of faith, not us or what we do. You know, it would have been amazing enough just to see all three of them no longer bound and tied up, but the focus suddenly for Nebuchadnezzar was like, they're not alone. It's not just the three of them. There's another in there. I love how in this particular passage it even puts an emphasis on the fact that the fire was so hot that even the men who walked them up there to put them in died. Even they were burnt up because it wasn't about them either. Very often we forget that God uses us to display what real faith is. And just like Nebuchadnezzar saw Jesus, he saw this other person along with them. We can get so caught up in ourselves, in our own situation, that we can forget that what people see when they see you stand up in faith, what people see when they see you not willing to compromise, it's not about you. They will see you, yes, because you are what they're watching, but what they're really seeing is Christ through you. What they're really seeing is an example of Christ being there, because nobody in their right mind, nobody without faith in a real God, nobody without the confidence that God is going to be there with them would do something like what they did. And just like what Daniel would do many years later, he saw this same thing too. Christ has to be seen through us. Real faith is seen through us. And it's not just in these big, amazing displays of, you know, triumph and overcoming. It's in your daily life. See, one of the things, and we don't have time, we're not going to go through all this now, but what we find is it wasn't just that they would not bow down and worship this idol, but we have to keep this in perspective. These boys were plucked out of their own home, their own culture, their own faith. They were taken away and they were subjected to years and years of what we might call propaganda, indoctrination even. They were basically taught, because they were the best of the best and the brightest of the brightest, and they were considered valuable resources to the king, they were taken and chosen to be trained up in such a way that they could serve the king. And you know what? They did an excellent job. So much so that what we looked at earlier, they said, you know, there's some people who have kind of risen up, and they're your people now. They're your leaders. You count on them. You rely on them to govern and legislate and do these things. And yet, they don't bow down to your God. But it wasn't just that. They don't eat your food. They don't obey. They don't practice. They don't get involved in the things that everybody else. They are separate and apart. And they maintain that even through the indoctrination, even through the propaganda, even through all of the things that were being forced on them. they maintain their faith. When you stand up and you maintain your faith, you maintain your conviction that this is not acceptable, I will not compromise, I will not be moved, that I will look at things the way God wants me to look at them, and it doesn't matter what everybody else thinks. Sometimes we can think that we're being tested, that we're being tried, that we're being put in a compromising position, but in reality, what's actually happening is we need to change the way we look at it, because in reality, God is using us to show others what real faith looks like. You know, I saw this and I thought it was interesting, because this is so much of what we have to do as Christians, so much of what we have to consider. This guy says, the glass is half full. The other guy says, the glass is half empty. And they each have a perspective, and they each, you could argue each side of it, but what she says is, the lady says, the glass needs resizing. The glass needs resizing. We need to look at this thing altogether different. Because that struggle that you're going through in your marriage, that struggle that you're going through with your finances, that struggle that you're having, that compromising position that people are trying to force you into, all of that, we can think about it from our perspective as though it's about us. But what we see here with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they said, no, this isn't about us at all. This is actually about you. I know what God is going to do for me. I know, even if I don't understand all the reasons, I know God has me in this situation for a reason, but it's not me. I've already committed myself to him. I already trust and have faith in this God. But what about you? Sometimes we have to change our vision and turn the tables and understand that the issues and the trials and the struggles that we're going through have nothing to do with us at all. It's about God being seen through us. And we have to change our perspective in order for us to increase in our faith. We'll finish it up here. Daniel chapter 3, verse 26. Then Nebuchadnezzar went near the mouth of the burning fiery furnace and spoke, saying, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out and come here. Just put a little pin in there. Think about this. Their display of faith and being unwilling to be moved, suddenly this crazy, off-his-rocker, egotistical, just king who thought only of himself and what his agenda was and he wanted, he went from saying, what will your God do for you? What God is going to save you? To saying, servants of the Most High God. Continue on. Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came from the midst of the fire, and the satraps, administrators, governors, and the king's counselors gathered together, and they saw these men on whose bodies the fire had no power. The hair of their head was not singed, nor were their garments affected, and the smell of fire was not on them. Nebuchadnezzar spoke, saying, blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who sent his angel and delivered his servants who trusted in him. And they have frustrated the king's word and yielded their bodies that they should not serve nor worship any god except their own God. Therefore, I make a decree that any people, nation, or language which speaks anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut in pieces, and their houses shall be made an ash heap, because there is no other God who can deliver like this. Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. Now, it's safe to say that even though he came to a place where he understood who this God was, Nebuchadnezzar still had a long way to go, right? Like, he went from, I'm going to throw you in a fiery furnace, to, okay, now I'm going to cut anybody up who says anything bad about your God. But we'll talk about that another day. The point is, what we see here and what we have to understand in the big picture is how amazing it is that just these three men, in their act of faith, their unwillingness to compromise on their faith, their unwillingness to doubt who their God is, being willing to stand up, how it changed a king. Nebuchadnezzar was seen as so unstable that people were afraid. It's like they were tiptoeing around him. They were scared to speak anything to him, good or bad. And yet, because they were willing to speak the truth, and they were not willing to give up on their faith in their God, they changed even him. See, sometimes we can look at our example and we can think, well, maybe I can help a few people. Maybe I can help a friend or a relative or something like that. And we look at certain situations. We think about, we have that boss at work. We have that general manager. We have that, you know, vice president. We have that person who not only are they powerful, not only are they influential and considered important to other people, but they're also maybe not the most stable. Maybe they're not the most bright. Maybe they're just not the most reasonable. And we don't want to run afoul of them. So if they say do it, we just try to figure out how we can do it. You know, maybe you're in a situation. Maybe it is in your family. Maybe it is somebody else who's close to you. And you're like, you know what? I just don't want to mess up. I just don't want to run afoul. I just don't want to do anything that's going to cause a problem. And we have to remember, God put you there not so that your faith could be shaken, not so that you could somehow have to wrestle with compromise, but God actually put you there, just like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, so that you could reveal God to somebody else. How people see your faith is less about proving your faith than proving yourself faithful to him. Sometimes, as I said earlier, we get so caught up and feel like we have to earn it. We got to prove it. We got to do all these things to somehow prove who we are to other people instead of proving how faithful we are to God. We talked about this earlier in Sunday school, how we're going to mess up. As human beings, we're imperfect. So we're going to mess up. But when God shows himself to be faithful to us, see, he can't do that if we're not in the fiery furnace. If you're not struggling with anything, then people will look and think, well, of course you believe in God. He's made your life perfect. Isn't that what he said to Job? It's like, hey, I mean, he's got everything he could ever ask for, God. But I guarantee you, if I make them struggle, if I make them go through something, if I take something away from them, if I harm somebody, if I take his money, if I take his stability, will he still be faithful to you then? Our faith, the faith that we see in these young men, the faith that we see in Job, the faith that we see throughout all of these men and women in the Bible is an example to us. It's a reminder to us that our faith is less about us trying to prove something and prove our worthiness to God, and far more about proving that God is faithful. When we go through those hard times and God brings us through it, he was faithful. We can confidently say, guess what? And even if he doesn't give me the outcome that I expect, I'm still not going to compromise because I know my God and I have faith in him. And that is powerful because it helps God through you, through little old measly you. It helps God to be able to transform other people's lives, just like we see here in the example of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. A few questions I want to end with. Number one, does my faith keep me grounded and calm during times of testing? Do I look at my shackles before or after I look at God? You know, this is so much of this story and what it's about. They didn't get caught up on what they were bound by. They didn't get caught up on the fact that they were shackled or roped or chained or that they were unable to be free. They didn't get caught up on their circumstances and what was limiting them or what they were facing, because they never took their eyes off of the fact that God was there. They never lost sight of the fact that it didn't matter whether they had the perfect car or no car, or whether they had the great job or they were getting ready to lose their job, or whether their relationship was in jeopardy, or whether they didn't know where they were going to live. None of that mattered in the grand scheme of things, because they understood and they had faith that this God is going to take care of us. Do we have that type of faith? Do you have that type of faith that says, no matter what the situation is, I know that my God is bigger than this perceived obstacle that's in front of me? Number two, does my faith change with the size of my circumstance, or does my view of each circumstance look the same based on my God? You know, I think of how, I'll use this analogy. I think of how when my son, he came out to me. He doesn't come out to the gym floor when I'm working out. Usually when I'm working out, you know, I take him over to the little kids area they have over at the gym. And a couple times, you know, I went and got him because I think one time he had his T-shirt on. I want this guy to be able to see. His name is Brandon. I told Brandon about this T-shirt. So I wanted my son to come out from the children's area. He comes out there to meet Brandon, and he shows him this Batman T-shirt he has on. Brandon likes Batman. And it was interesting because afterwards my son, he kept wanting to come out to the gym floor and lift up these dumbbells and lift up these weights, right? Because all he knows is I go out there and I lift some weights. Now, the thing is, in his mind, he's like, that says 30 on it. Yeah, I'm like, yeah, that's 30 pounds. He says, is that heavy? And I said, well, heavy is relative. Heavy is relative. Heavy is as heavy as, you know, something that you're able to lift. Well, he said, that one says 80. Can you lift that one? I said, yes, as a matter of fact, I can. He's like, okay, well, what about that one? He points over to the hundreds. Yeah, I can lift that too. See, here's the thing. For him, he can't lift any of it. He can't lift any of it. In his mind, 5 pounds and 30 pounds and 80 pounds and 100 pounds, they're all the same to him because he can't lift it. He can't move it. He doesn't realize it. For me, you got to start getting way up over 100 before it becomes a problem for me to lift. The point is that very often we look at our obstacles, we look at our struggles, and we think this is a 10-pound struggle. And I know God worked me through that, and I know that that situation worked out, but this over here is a 65-pound struggle. You know, this is big. Well, this is life-altering. This is a 110-pound struggle. And we forget that our God is like, there is no weight that you can give me that I can't lift. There is no obstacle, whether it's big, small, in your mind, it doesn't matter to me. I'm not limited by the things that you're limited by. When we see the circumstances that we face, does our faith change based on the size of it? Or is it all the same because we serve the exact same God? How much of an impact could I make in the lives of others if I lived a life that is unshakable? Who could see God more clearly through my life if I simply did not flinch when trouble comes? You know, that idea of not flinching, one of my best friends, his name is Dusty, he told me one time, I remember I was going through a problem, this is probably 20-something years ago, I remember because I was in college still, and he was telling me how, you know, we were driving around, and he was letting me talk, right? And I was telling him all these different things I was trying and it wasn't working. And he finally said to me, he said, you've got nothing to prove. You've got nothing to prove. The only thing you have to do is be still and keep doing what you're doing and let God do the rest. He said, because guess what? While you're trying to think of all the answers and all the solutions, it's not even about you. It's not even about trying to prove that you have an answer or trying to prove that you're right. What it's really about is there are eyeballs all the time watching you, because people know that you made Jesus as Lord. People know that you're a Christian. People are watching you, and they want to see if you're going to flinch. They want to see if you're going to be shaken. When you don't shake, when you don't struggle, when you don't sweat, it's not a matter of ego or arrogance. It's a matter of, I know who my God is. How many people would you be able to impact? How many people would be able to see God through you? How many people would truly understand the love of God by watching you if you just didn't flinch? If you just said, it doesn't matter what it is, I know that God is going to take care of it. And finally, do I believe in a God that is not limited by the things of this world? Does my life prove my belief in the one that saves? You know, I say, does my life prove it? Because very often, we know the right thing to say is that this God that we serve, this God that we love, this God that we believe in, that he's unlimited. But do we live like when we walk into the gym, there's no weight in there that God can't lift? Do we live like when we walk out of here today, when we go to our jobs, when we go to our homes, when we go through our day-to-day living, do we live lives like, I know that there's nothing that my God can't do for me or you or anyone else? Is that how we live? Because as we see with these three young men, as we see in Daniel, as we see in so many other examples, their faith impacted others. Their unwillingness to believe in this limited God, it impacted so many other people. That is the type of faith that we have to display, whether we're just standing in line at the post office, whether we're at the grocery store, whatever it is, our faith has to be on display at all times, that we will not be shaken, we will not compromise, we won't be moved. If you don't know this God, if you don't have a relationship with a God that is unlimited, you need to get to know him. You need to build a relationship with the real God, not some idol, not something that we chase after in life, not something that the world says is valuable, but a real relationship with God. Something that nobody can take from you, that nobody can snatch away from you, something that nobody can steal from you. We want to show the world, and sometimes we want to put up the face and the facade, but we don't really believe that our God is unlimited, because we don't really know who that real God is. If you don't know who that real God is, today is the day. Learn. Find out. As a church, we're willing to help. We want to teach you. We want to show you what it is to have that real relationship with the one true living God, a God who is unlimited, a God who's not bound by the things of this world. And if you don't have that relationship with him, then seek it out. Get the help that you need. Allow us as a church to be able to bring you to a place where you can know and be assured that just like these young men had that faith, you can have that same faith knowing that you are in relationship with the one true living God. Please stand as we sing our song of invitation.